This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. As part of WABE's continuing coverage of the fight against child sex trafficking in Georgia, we take a look at how a new order from President Obama might affect that. The president this week announced that the government will be tracking contractors more to make sure that they are not involved in human or child sex trafficking. Sally Yates is the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia, which, of course, covers Atlanta. Sally Yates, welcome. Good to have you.
I'm glad to be here, Dennis. Thanks for having me.
The president's order talks about keeping track of government contractors, whether it's anything from food to, I guess, military hardware and everything in between. Is there any way, though, really to enforce that order, and how much of that falls on you, or is it done through another part of the federal government?
Well, really, this is going to be something new for us, so we aren't really sure exactly how it's going to shake out yet. But certainly we are hopeful that there is a way to keep track of at least some of it and to find at least some. And it's trafficking as it relates to two different areas, both forced labor, which is a significant issue in this country and abroad, as well as sex trafficking. We know, for example, that there are contractors working or have known of instances in the past where there were contractors working in foreign countries where they then were jaunts at brothels, for example, in Thailand and other places. And that's simply not acceptable. When you're working for the United States government as a contractor, you shouldn't be engaged in this kind of conduct. And I believe that's what President Obama was referring to there.
So if I understand you, then the actual mechanism of enforcing this still has to be worked out?
I'm not necessarily privy to that right now. There may be others who are more on the ground on this issue that may have worked all of that out, because some of this would involve criminal charges. Other aspects of it, though, would simply involve contracting, that you either cancel contracts or they're not eligible for contracting as well. And contracting is not something that our office is involved in.
But the fact that we're looking at contractors and kind of an economic club over their heads, does that say to you that because human trafficking and particularly child sex trafficking is so difficult to find, that maybe some sort of economic club, if you will, is going to be more effective than even the law enforcement part of it?
I think this is a reflection of really this administration's desire to use every possible means to try to root out and to address human trafficking. As you mentioned, it is very difficult to find. And so we want to rely on our standard law enforcement techniques. But I think this is a recognition that we need to be trying new, more creative approaches as well.
As you look at the effort here in Metro Atlanta, you had an arraignment recently of some young men who were part of what they call the mob or the MOB, and they are accused of some particularly violent child sex trafficking. You also had a sentencing of a single operator, if you will. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing gangs get into child sex trafficking in any kind of organized way in this area?
Certainly that's been something that we have seen across the country. Just as gangs in the past have used drug trafficking, for example, as a means to make money for the gang, some gangs have gotten into human trafficking now. It's less dangerous in the sense that they're not dealing with other violent organizations like the Mexican drug cartels. It's almost all profit as opposed to drug trafficking, where there are significant capital outlays, shall we say, to purchase the drugs. And there has in the past been very little chance of getting caught. And so this is an incredibly profitable, unfortunately, an incredibly profitable area. In fact, second to drug trafficking, it is the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world right now. So other cities have seen certainly their organized gangs involved in human trafficking. Here in Atlanta, we haven't seen it as gang activity so much so to earn money for the gangs. The cases that we recently indicted, there were several members of the gang that were indicted, but at least so far the indication is not necessarily that it was to raise money for the gang. But we don't know yet. I mean, that's one of the things about human trafficking, is that it is so difficult to detect. I'm not going to pretend that there are things going on out there and that we know about all of the, everything that's happening. We're trying very hard, but we're still learning about what's going on in our city.
If it's happening in other places, in ways that we can see more. Is there anything that we can do to keep it from spreading to here in a kind of organized way? Or are we just pretty much having to react to things?
We have concerns besides the gang involvement here, because even if it's not a gang in sort of the traditional sense of the word that we think of when we think of gangs, there certainly are organized groups now involved in human trafficking. And that may be their only enterprise is human trafficking. Certainly there are organizations, for example, that move girls around from city to city. They advertise these girls on internet websites that they're, you know, the girl will be here, you know, Tuesday through Friday, and she'll be in Memphis next week. And so there certainly are organized groups who are involved in this. And we are going after those groups, and we're going after those across all across the country.
Are you thinking at this point that you've been able to make any kind of dent in the growth of this kind of activity?
You know, we've been very aggressive in this area, particularly in the last couple of years. In just the last 2 years, we've brought 16 separate cases. Many of those cases involve multiple defendants. So we've brought a lot of cases in this district. You know, it's always hard in this area to know just what kind of dent that you're making. People oftentimes ask me, you know, what are the numbers? How many people are being trafficked? You know, I've heard all sorts of estimates of numbers, and candidly, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't think any of us know precisely what the numbers are, in large part because of the type of crime that this is. It happens in the shadows, as we say. And while we have, I think, made a significant dent in the number of cases that we brought, it's hard to know how many more are out there that we haven't found yet.
The other part of that, then, is the victims. How much progress have we made in getting victims, particularly those from other countries, who might fear deportation, immigration enforcement, those kinds of things, to come forward and cooperate with the authorities? Are we seeing more of them willing to do that, or is that still a big challenge?
It's still a challenge, but we are seeing an improvement in that area, and that's something that both the Department of Justice generally and our office specifically have been working very hard to try to make it known within the immigrant communities here that it is safe for them to raise their hands, that it's safe for the girls who are victims to raise their hands, but it's also safe for members of the community who may suspect or know about trafficking, but yet they are fearful of coming to law enforcement because they may be undocumented themselves. And so the ICE here in Atlanta has engaged in a very strong effort to try to engage with the communities to let them know that they don't need to be fearful about being deported, for example, in that circumstance, that there are special accommodations that can and are made there. We've done things of trying to put posters up and make sure that we do it in languages other than English so that we can speak to groups there. We go out and speak to organizations. And we have seen more of an outcry from those communities. Again, you know, it's hard to know how many more folks are there that we're not hearing from. But we feel like we have been aggressively pursuing this area here in the city for several years now. And the groundswell of support from this community has really been overwhelming. It's not just the feds that are involved in this or local prosecutors, but there are a number of community organizations that have gotten involved to help provide a safe place for victims and support services for victims as well. And that's really critical, I think, to our city successfully addressing this.
Because some of these victims end up as perpetrators as they get older. We often see somebody who might have been abused and recruited and pimped out as a child become part of the organization, and then by then she's an adult. She might be an enforcer for the organization or whatever. And so she is then abusing children. But when you get a case like that where somebody started as a child but is now an adult, what do you do?
You know, it really all depends on the circumstances of the case. We haven't had one where the woman had actually started as a child. We have had those, though, where they were victimized, they were trafficked, and then they became, as you said, a recruiter or an enforcer for the pimp and worked their way up. And, you know, in some of those instances, those individuals have not been prosecuted. In others, they have, but they've received a significantly lower sentence because they've assisted in the prosecution as well. It really all depends on what their conduct was. You know, it's one thing to then become a recruiter. It's another thing if you are then involved in physically abusing these girls. And there is accountability for everyone. And so it really is very fact-specific in terms of what we do in those cases.
We now have Congress coming back after the election, trying to avoid the fiscal cliff. But there is the threat of sequestration hanging over their heads. And what that would be across-the-board budget cuts if they can't work out a deal. What would that do to your efforts if it happened?
Well, it would have an impact not just on our sex trafficking prosecutions, but all of our prosecutions. We've looked, and certainly our employees would be furloughed for, depending on exactly what the numbers end up being, but for a significant period of time, which will have a dramatic impact on the cases that we're able to prosecute here. And certainly sex trafficking prosecutions would not be immune from that. I'm certainly maybe ever the optimist, though. I am hopeful that that's not going to be the case and that everyone will realize how important it is that our government continue to function and that offices like ours that are important for community safety can continue to function.
Have you gotten any assurances from figures in either party that they'll be able to avoid that?
Well, no, I'm not talking directly with figures in either party on this. That's what other folks in Washington deal with. And I just try to keep my head down here and do my job here as U.S. attorney. And other people are haggling over the budget.
Has the state of communications between the federal level and the state improved? Because we talked to GBI Director Vernon Keenan recently. He is dedicating more resources to this, sometimes at the expense of other vital law enforcement operations. That would presume that there's more communication to try to use the dollars as best you can.
Absolutely. There's really, I think, unprecedented cooperation and communication in this district now, both with our other federal partners. FBI and ICE are working together. We also are working with GBI and our state, our local counterparts, Fulton County and DeKalb County as well, because we're all committed to doing everything we can to combat human trafficking. And we get together and strategize about how best to approach a case or a particular investigation and who's in the best position to be able to prosecute it most effectively.
Are you satisfied as you look at it, say, over the last few years when attention has started to focus on human trafficking in general and child sex trafficking in particular, that we're making progress? Or do you say we really don't know because it's so hard to find out when and where this is happening?
No, I think we're definitely making progress, and I'm very optimistic about that. For example, oftentimes, it's the local law enforcement officer who may first come across or sometimes even stumble on a human trafficking situation. In the past, oftentimes, those local cops, through really no fault of their own, they just hadn't been trained, didn't recognize that these girls were victims and instead looked at them as willing prostitutes and treated them like criminals rather than like victims. But we've been very involved, as has the GBI, for example, here in our state, in training local law enforcement officers in how to recognize some of the signs of human trafficking. And things are changing. There are girls who are being identified now as victims who in the past would have simply been booked as prostitutes and sent to juvenile. Now they are rescued and they are speaking out, particularly once they're comfortable. And we're able then to go after their persecutors here, the pimps.
What would you say, though, to people who say they may be victims and should be treated as victims, but they also have responsibility for their actions? They're engaged in a criminal act. Is there a point at which you say, okay, there has to be some punishment in some cases, depending on the facts, of course?
You know, I would challenge anybody who says that to sit down across the table from one of these young teenage girls who has been prostituted in this way. First of all, legally, they're under the age of consent, so they can't consent to begin with. So from a legal proposition, they are not criminals, they are victims. But from a human position, too, if they sit down and hear the horrific circumstances that these young girls have endured, and if they were to think about their own children and to think there but by the grace of God are their children, I would challenge any of them to say that these young victims need to be held accountable and sent to prison, but rather that they need to be embraced and rescued.
So you have not prosecuted anyone who would be considered a minor?
Oh, no, we have not.
If someone wants to make a difference, just listening, is there anything that a person who may not know much about the facts of it all could still do to make a difference?
Well, I think that there are lots of organizations in town. If anybody is interested in participating in this, all they have to do is, you know, type in human trafficking Atlanta, Google that, and they'll come up with all sorts of organizations in the city, from faith-based organizations and other types as well. If you are a lawyer, you can work with young women who are here illegally to assist them in the immigration issues that they may face in some of the trafficking situations. There are all sorts of organizations that deal with providing emotional support and counseling, providing housing, job training for these young women as they reenter society after the horrific situations that they've endured. The most effective way to go after this is a combined enforcement and prevention effort. And really, all of our citizens in our city coming together in that way is how I think we're going to most effectively deal with this problem.
Sally Yates is the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Georgia here in Atlanta, and she spoke to us in her office in downtown Atlanta. Sally Yates, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.